Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Game Store Profits, episode 138. And the planets have aligned, everything's working smoothly. There neither disease nor technical issues nor screwed up MP3s will keep us down. All of us are actually here for a change. So I'm here with Mr. Jeff Romo.
Good evening.
And Mr. Daniel Fisher.
Hello, hello, hello. That was horrible. I don't know why I did that, guys. I'm sorry. That's fine.
Why should you apologize? When I sat down to make sure that everything was posted and up for the last one that y'all did without me, as I'm getting ready to record my future mic stuff and talk about things, I hear the ridiculousness that y'all did when I wasn't here.
But you loved every minute of it.
You got turned out.
Did.
We got turned out.
I never thought that I would ever be considered a calming influence. But apparently wonders never cease.
It's like, you know how kids act around their parents?
Yeah.
That's how we act around you.
Yeah. So if next time you take a day off, you better replace yourself with a life replicant. So we know you're there in some way, shape, or form.
I'll do the replicant that they do for The Last Starfighter.
Reaching right into the heartstrings of my nostalgia organ. I love it.
I haven't watched it in a while.
Oh, it does not age well.
I think it does. That doesn't Voltron for me. Voltron doesn't age well, but this one I thought was decent.
The reason it ages well for you is because you watched it. You're watching it with nostalgia eyes. I do too.
Yeah.
But all you need to do is try to introduce that to someone who's never seen it before.
That's when it happened. We were driving home tonight from Walmart because we had to go get some stuff to make Halloween costumes. And my wife made a reference to Never Ending Story.
Yes.
And I was like, do you realize our kids have never seen that? And she's like, what? I said, we have to fix this.
Yeah.
We have to fix this. And she's like, why have they ever seen it? I said, well, we don't own a copy. And the only version is on Netflix. On Netflix is Never Ending Story 2, which I've never seen.
Oh, don't want to see it. Don't subject yourself to that.
Here, I'm going to preemptively help you with your children. There is only one Never Ending Story.
That's right.
Well, technically, right. I think there's three.
There is only one.
If Perna and I find out that you've watched any other version of the Never Ending Story, we will cancel your Netflix.
Well, now you realize, to me, the only version of The Hobbit's the cartoon, right?
Mm.
I'll give that to you. See, but we could really get off topic. I mean, we're already like 4 minutes and we haven't talked about a single game, and I don't care because it gives me a chance to talk about the fact that I now have Where There's a Whip, There's a Way running through my head.
Yes! Yeah.
Because not to get on too weird a sidetrack, but I do have to explain that I just said Where There's a Whip, There's a Way.
Please explain it quickly.
The good people at Rankin Bass, makers of terribly beautiful cartoons.
Stop animation.
From the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. did two Hobbit Lord of the Rings based cartoons. One of them was The Hobbit, and it did the story of The Hobbit. It is one of the best Hobbit things out there.
Oh, yeah.
The reason being is because they didn't have to cut things out. They also did The Lord of the Rings, but they tried to do all three stories in one cartoon. And the song that I reference is a song sung by orcs as they're going through on their way to Mordor. No, they're in Mordor. It's when they just get in.
It's when they're leaving the Black Gates, right?
It's when they just get in and they it's the scene where they kind of get in. They put on the armor from the dead guys and just kind of try to blend in. And the marching song is this wonderfulness called Where There's a Whip, There's a Way. And if it's on YouTube, I will put it in the show notes.
Please.
Because it's the kind of thing that just gets in your head. I have both these DVDs, but I can't tell you the last time I watched it. But I can still sing that entire song. And even though I only have one voice, the harmony exists in my head because it's just that catchy.
And that's all you need. That kind of a heart. to watch The Last Starfighter.
Yes. But anyway, because we are not here to talk about, you know, nostalgic awesomeness from our childhood.
Yeah.
Though all of that is awesome and you should definitely go look at it.
To talk about, it'll come later.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking of we're going to get, you know what? Let's just get to it. Hey, Daniel.
This is why I'm so giddy.
What game are you excited about right now that happens to be a re-release of an older game?
If you have followed Spiel any at all and are a GW flunky, that's probably the best way I'd put it for myself.
Flunky.
Blood Bowl is being re-released. Everybody clap. Yay! And, you know, they did post pictures. They had an unboxing. And, you know, the miniatures, they pulled the miniatures out. And this is the coolest thing that they have ever done. One team, all the miniatures are done in one color of plastic. The other team, a different color of plastic. So for those lazy people that don't really like painting miniatures, I hate you. But you don't have to paint your miniatures now.
That, you just laid it out there, man.
Yeah, I know. I love you guys anyway, but I can give you some painting lessons. But yeah, they're beautiful looking miniatures. The board's pretty nice looking. It's actually double sided, so you can play on the orc's turf, or you can flip it over and play on the human pitch. And
I didn't know that was happening. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, and they've added a few things. Now, I did ask Tom, because, as you know, I'm friends with Tom Anders, and he has secretly been keeping Blood Bowl going for the last 15 years over at Impact Miniatures. He is one of the main contributors to the Living Rulebook, and he's kept that going and going and going, and he actually worked for GW at a point with Blood Bowl, because for some odd reason, he's got this mind that can just turn a sport into a board game. It's just, it's weird. He's like, I don't really watch a lot of sports. And so, but I asked him about the Living Rulebook, if they're going to change that, and he couldn't give me a definite answer. Since it is their IP, though, and their baby, they can do with it what they want. I just don't know how well it's going to go over with the people that have been playing Blood Bowl for 15 years without GW's interference.
I am curious about it because, like, Blood Bowl, especially because they've had all the video games as well, so not just the old board game to build off of, but the video games as well. There are a ton of teams and a ton of stuff out there in the lore aspect of the game. And so I'm curious to see how they, as far as a business model, how they release them. Are they going to do whole teams? Are they going to do, like, special, like, the mercenary, like, all-star guys? Like, how are they going to release all that in the future? Because right now it's just orcs and humans.
Right. And the way they've done it in the past, though, is they've released an entire team, but they have a star player that sits out. So you always have to buy that star player. And if we know anything about GW's pricing scale, that star player will probably cost as much as the board game itself.
Yeah. Daniel was kidding when he said he hates you. Games Workshop does actually hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they send out cards once a year, you know, to those who have bought the game.
No, it's like those cards that you get when the police department wants you to donate money. That's the cards you get at Christmas time. It's like, hey, for us not to come and try to see you for not using the correct color of paint on your miniatures, fill this card out and send a check to us at, you know, sorry.
Yeah.
If anybody from GW is listening, hi, I like your stuff.
Your stuff is incredibly awesome, but incredibly unfriendly to pocketbooks.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah.
I remember the years of just rotting my paycheck over to the comic shop. Yes. In high school, I worked at fast food, and I just walk in there, and like, Dwayne would look at me like it's payday, isn't it? And I said, yep, here you go. And I'll take this.
It's a lot more difficult now to try and assign, you know, your ACH number and all that stuff, you know, and get the routing and stuff taken care of from your paycheck straight to the game shop. So
yeah,
but I yearn for the days when we just had to sign over paychecks. That was a lot easier.
Yeah, it was it really was, and I really did that. So
I'm right there with you, man. That's when I was in my 3.0, 3.5, you know, craze as I kept buying every single book I could possibly get.
Well, as I know this is hard for you guys to believe, I played dwarves.
Hey, I got a dwarf set right behind me.
And so, you know, I will say that, you know, if I were to get into a board game or tabletop game that involved, that turned some form of sport into a blood sport, I would, for my money, would be going for Guild Ball. And I'm very excited because Guild Ball, they just announced that next month they will be releasing a starter box, which instead, because normally Guild Ball miniatures are metal, which I love because that means they're decent quality miniatures.
And what's kind of cool about them is that they're metal and they're metal.
Awesome. Yeah, with the big hair, spray hair, and all that other stuff.
It makes them great, but it also makes them expensive. Like, to field a full team, I mean, right now Miniatures Market is having a huge sale, and there's so much Guild Ball, and I messaged Jeff earlier, and I'm not even kidding with this, listeners. No. I literally did this. I messaged Jeff and said, remind me that I'm poor and that I need to be strong.
I thought something else was going on because I messaged back saying, you're not poor. You're rich in friends and the lives you've touched through this ministry. And he's like, no. Bring it down, Romo. We're talking about Miniature Market having a sale. I'm like, oh.
He goes, oh, yeah, no, you just need to rely on Jesus.
We need to do a GoFundMe so you can get Guild Ball, buddy.
Even with that sale, it would still be like 60 or 70 bucks to field a full team.
Yeah.
And then you got to find somebody else to play.
Right. And then you need somebody else to get their own team.
Right.
And it's hard when I'm still getting people excited about, you know, games that last longer than an hour around here. They're just the people that I'm playing with. So many of them are just barely getting into board games. And so it's hard for me to get the heavier stuff. So when I roll up and say, hey, I want you to drop $100 to get an army, and then it'll probably throw a couple bucks to my buddy Brett to paint them. And then, oh, by the way, then we'll get to the actual playing of the game, and you'll have to get like three more guys.
Yeah. Right.
And it's really hard to sell that, but this thing they're calling the kickoff box, it's basically exactly what you said. It is a full team, but instead of the metal figs, it is I think they're resin teams, and it's limited to only the two guilds. It's not, you know, you don't get to pick from all of them. I believe it's the Masons and the Butchers. Just like you were saying, they're also, each team has their own color of resin. But the cool thing about the kickoff is that it comes with a pitch mat, which is basically where it's played on. Mm-hmm. It comes with all the little measuring things, which normally you'd have to buy separate. Now, granted, I'm sure that in the box they're just cardboard, they're punch cardboard.
Yeah.
But it still means that it's something that normally you'd have to get, or you'd have to get a tape measurer or something like that.
Right.
And they're giving it to you. Now, granted, if I do someday down the line end up actually getting into Guild Ball, I'll want to get the metal miniatures. I'll want to have my team, not just whatever generic team. And I'll want to paint them and get the plastic, you know, hardcore measuring stuff and the tokens. I'll want to get that, but it's nice to try and get somebody else excited about it as I am, because I can get all of that, the mat, the tokens, the two teams, I can get all of that for less than the cost of fielding my own team.
That's pretty good. That's actually a very cool option for, because it gets people interested into the game. It gets you right into the rules to where you can fall in love with the game instead of that hurdle of getting the metal minis and that stuff.
And one thing that's really exciting to me about Guild Ball, and I think I've mentioned this, one thing that set it above and beyond, like even with my own bias against Games Workshop, which I'll admit, because I don't think anyone from Games Workshop listens to us, I am really frustrated with your business model and you annoy the heck out of me. One thing that I loved about Guild Ball and the guys at Steamforged is that Steamforged basically said, here's the rule book. And if you don't mind not having miniatures, here's a bunch of paper to represent the guys. You can literally play this game for free.
So why haven't you done
that? Because I'm still trying to get people excited about it.
We could probably set up something like in Fantasy Grounds or Roll 20 and create a game mat. And
we could use the tokens. Yeah, I could use the tokens for that. Yeah, we could do that.
And the thing I love about it is that there is like Guild Ball is not, you know, completely devoid of, you need, they do have to make money. So they will, like, they do seasons for their rules. But again, you have the option of just being like, okay, here's the changes. Like, you don't have to, like, Games Workshop is the kind of people who say, oh, okay, now we've released Age of Sigmar. Now everything you've ever played is invalidated by this extra stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Makes it tough to get into the
hobby. It seems to me that Steamforged is saying, no, we want you to buy our stuff, but we want you to not feel prohibited about buying our stuff.
Yikes.
I just think that sometimes GW and Wizards, just the part of the Wizards that handles Magic, are in cahoots with each other.
Mm.
Because, you know, you can't play in tournaments if your cards are over 2 releases old.
Well, it's the way you got to maintain a game for a game to continue. Because, like, Netrunner does that now, too. Fantasy Flight has said, you know, after a certain amount of time, you know, the little data packs are going to go the way of the buffalo.
It happens. I mean, there's got to be some evolution to some of these games. And it gives them longevity, right? It gives them legs to where they'll last more than, the brief attention span that we normally have as gamers.
Yeah.
So.
But also, that's kind of why, like, board games versus like the hardcore, like tabletop. I mean, you know, I've played 40K ever since I was, 15. That's 23 years. and I've taken a hiatus. I haven't really played in the last year or so. But the thing with me is board games are just more interesting because of the fact that the rules don't change that much at all. Unless something is seriously broken, you're not going to get an updated rule.
Yeah.
And even if you do, it's going to be as part of a major revamp that will not invalidate what you already have.
Right.
Right.
And people will be willing to play it with the old rules versus if you go to, and I'll tell you this, GW is insane. Like, there's a rule for tournaments that if you don't use GW paint on your miniatures, you cannot play it.
Right.
Nobody has enforced this yet, but yet that rule is in there.
How do they tell?
If the color's off. They could be like, well, you need to prove that you painted that with GW paint.
Because Games Workshop sells you kits that says this is for the orcs and this is for this. And
oh my goodness.
And eventually it's going to be the same way with the dice. They'll be like, you can't play this Blood Bowl unless you have the official GW dice for it. They've started coming out with a new dice for 40K, and they'll probably end up eventually saying something like, if you play in a tournament, you have to have our dice. If you play in a tournament, you have to have our tape measure, and that's the scary part about it, because they control the tournaments.
Like I said, GW hates you and has a terrible plan for your life.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's why when I first found out that Fantasy Flight was going away from like the RPG arm, some of the stuff they were covering from GW, I went out and I snatched up Dark Heresy as quickly as I could, so that I'd at least have that before it went out of print.
Still want Fury of Dracula.
Oh, you want to hear something? You want to hear something?
Go ahead.
I was at a bookstore, B.N. Noble. No, that's two offices. Barnes and K. And so I found a copy there.
Yep.
You want to guess the price?
$700.
A little bit lower than that. $89.
What?
That's about recommended retail for it.
$9.99. So technically $90. But I was just like, wow. Because I saw it and I grabbed it and I was like, oh, I could. And I looked at the price and I'm like, I could put this back down. So I put it right back down. So, yes. That was
a sticker
shock.
You. Because
I was thinking, if it was like $50, I could totally explain that and say, okay, it's out of print, and my wife would totally be along board for it. But then when I saw that, I was like, nope.
Well, the good thing, like we were saying, is with board games, once you buy it, you've bought it. And even if they change the rules or come up with a second edition, the original one isn't invalidated. Like, I've got a game day coming up on Saturday, and it was fun because as is often the case with, because of the fact that so much of what I end up doing is with people who are brand new to tabletop gaming at all, I introduced King of Tokyo with a group of junior high guys.
Good choice.
And these guys loved it. Well, it happened to be, you know, as is my wont, every morning I check Miniature Market and Cool Stuff to see what the daily sales are and put it out there in case people were interested. And a while back, Cool Stuff, I think it was, had King of Tokyo, the second edition, for $20. And so I happened to let it, you know, let this one guy who is constantly asking me for King of Tokyo, I just kind of slipped it to his mom that maybe this might be a good thing to get. And so he's got it and he's getting all psyched to play it. And he goes, can I bring it? I go, I don't have second edition. Heck yeah, you can bring it. I want to be Space Penguin.
Nice.
So I think there are some slight rules variants to it, but it's super slight. And even if it was major, like nothing takes away what I have in my box.
Yeah. And then the other side of that, like the flip side, is having, you know, when you do get some of those variations in rules, sometimes they're improvements, you know, like for like
they're improvements.
Yeah. The aforementioned Fury of Dracula, a vast improvement over the previous edition as far as rules are concerned. And that's kind of, it's almost universally viewed that way. Even, you know, sometimes your tabletop games, they go, or your role-playing games, they go through those editions, right? You know, where, mm-hmm. Like WotC, you know, they invalidated editions before this, but I think they've kind of finally landed on one that's hopefully the one they stick with for a very long time.
But even then, you know, how many times, heck, y'all have both been on the Mad Cleric's little podcast or yes. YouTube video or whatever format he's doing it in, talking about how you can, you know, enjoy first edition and can convert things to first edition and
right or back and forth. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's with any game, I guess you have the decision to make, you know, do you want to stick with the current one or do you want to, you know, move on to something else?
Right.
So, yeah.
So sure. Is anybody else playing anything? 'Cause I do want to touch briefly on my little church experiment that I've got going on.
Well, why don't you do that, and then I'll launch into what I made the announcement today on Facebook, so I can launch into that, and that'll be a good transition into one of the big topics we wanted to jump on.
Okay.
All right, works for me. Yeah. So a while ago, I released an article on the site called Onitama in the Lobby. It was basically, I mentioned it on the podcast that happened after I released it. Right. And the short version was that I was just sitting there in the lobby of our church, because our church is hardly constructed like, you know, your typical church. It's basically a repurposed manufacturing plant. And so we have this really huge open lobby area. And so, you know, my wife and I both kind of, it was funny. We kind of just prepped everything and said, all right, God's going to do something this morning. I don't know what it is. So like we prepared for everything. We're like, okay, get your stuff. We're going to take separate cars in case one of us needs to stay longer or leave early. Like, we were just like, we don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen. And, you know, my wife had her own stuff going on, but I basically got, you know, quote unquote told, hey, dude, be in the lobby and bring Onitama. And I ended up playing and talking with people and having these really cool things. Well, I pretty much started an experiment after that and said, you know, and this is going to be fun. Like, normally I don't say anything that's going to get into a lot of trouble, though we might this episode a lot. But this is going to be something that might tweak some people that listen to us. Sermons do nothing for me. Church services do little to nothing for me. I spent 9 years learning how to craft a sermon. And while I still appreciate the craft, I can't get out of the academic mindset of it. Like I can read the beats of a sermon before it happens. And so I just have this disconnect. It's rare that anything that happens on a Sunday morning service speaks to me. However, I still go and I still love church, but there are primarily for me two reasons why I end up going. One, because God pretty much commands us to.
Right.
It's in the Bible, you know, to not step away from the gathering together of the saints, like to not disregard that. And so I go. The other reason is because I love being with people and being with God's people on a Sunday morning and talking about stuff. I love that. I usually get way more out of a Sunday morning talking to people before and after the service than I did in the service. And so I sat there and I said, we have this open lobby and there are people who are milling about in the lobby. Either they're watching on the overflow seats because we have this screen that's in the lobby and had like overflow, or people are just talking or having coffee or whatever. And I said, what if I roll up and just like that one Sunday with Onitama, I just roll up and I have my Bible, a book, and some games. And I just start off by just sitting in the lobby and praying and saying, God, what do you want to do? Do whatever you want and see what happens. The first week I did it, I ended up reading through a bit of the Gospel of Mark. I ended up reading a book that's written by a friend and former professor of mine called God With Us. It's a fantastic title. And that was it. I just hung out. And it was a really cool time. Then this past Sunday, I rolled up and I did read a little bit in Mark again. I read a section of God With Us, but you know, it didn't take long before a group of kids started coming over, high school kids. And I played a game of Pod X. I played Love Letter. And after a while I stepped out and let them play Love Letter. And you know, I was just getting a glass of water when one of the kids' moms comes up to me and she goes, I want to thank you so much for doing this. And I'm like, okay, what's up? She goes, and she used the kid's name, obviously, but she says, he doesn't always fit in well. And he doesn't always feel like he's a part of anything. And she goes, he's really into this stuff. And I look over, and he's the most excited one at the table.
Nice.
And I was just like, yeah, no, this is quickly not becoming an experiment anymore. I think this is just how I do church now.
That's cool.
And there's going to be people who don't like that because it's, you know, we've come to expect church to be a certain way and to look like a certain thing. But it's really interesting because I think part of the way inroads happened this way is partly because y'all let me steer the ship. And this is so much of what's been happening to me is that I'm driven to help people who don't find a home, find a home. And there are people at that church who don't necessarily not want to be at church, but don't want to do church the way we've always done church. And so their options are either sit there and be miserable and not connect to anything, not care about God's word, and in fact, probably harbor some resentment for being forced to be in this place, or they can hang out with me in the lobby. Of course, we're always respectful. We have to be quiet. I told the guys there were two reasons I would stop bringing games. One, if we ever interrupt the service in any way for any person, or if a parent gets pissed.
Right.
And I said, if either of those are the case, then I'm not going to bring them anymore. But I'm really curious to see how this goes because I think there is this movement to find new expressions of how to do church. Not that takes away anything from the way it's normally done, because I do think there's huge value in the way we do church. There's literally, you know, thousands of years of evolving church to get to where we are. I think there's value in what we do. But I also think that there are people on the fringes and the outskirts of that want to have some kind of different expression of faith and of church and of growing together in community and growing together with God. And so it'll be interesting to see as this progresses and how I keep doing this, how that works. Because so far it's been a huge success, but it's also only, two and a half weeks of doing this. So
you have to see how it unfolds before you, you know, but where you kind of get into that middle ground of, well, not so much middle ground, but more of steering away from specifically what you want as a desire goes, you know, being able to do something like this and making sure that you're on the path that the Lord wants. And I think the idea that you're stopping at the beginning and saying, okay, let me get into the Lord's word. Let me pray. Let me listen. and then seeing how it unfolds at that point, I think there's very little chance you're going to go wrong there, and you're going to get the message of whether it's working or not working pretty well.
Right, and I think that I like the way it's been unfolding so far, because at every point I just kind of say, all right, what do you want to do? And even if, like, I bring the games and I'm not the one doing it, or, like, I want there to be options, because there are times when people just want to talk to somebody. And sitting in a sermon, which, it's funny because I haven't been, like, it's going to be a terrible connection for some people, but it resonates with me. There's a reason why I don't go to the movies anymore, apart from the fact that they're freakish expensive. Part of it is just that I don't like the fact that I have to sit in one place and be silent for 2 hours with no interaction with other people. You know, in fact, interaction with other people, even if it's just to say, isn't that awesome? Or do you know who that is? Like, that's frowned upon in a movie theater. But it's what drives me, because the interacting with what's being put in front of me is so much of how I process things. Like, I loved watching, my wife and I recently double backed and watched Winter Soldier. Now, I'd read all those books, and so I knew basically the general framework of what was going to happen in the story, but she didn't. She's, the only thing she's ever experienced from the Marvel Universe is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so she's like, what's happening here? And who's that? And I'm like, oh, and the movie's still happening. And I'm like, oh, it's this guy and this guy. And I'm not going to tell you who that is, because you need to find that out. And all this stuff. And like, I'm showing her like what the character looks like in the comic book. Like, that is so much more interesting and in depth to me. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in this context.
Right.
Because I don't think I'm alone in that.
That's a good opportunity.
So you actually, speaking of opportunities, you like that segue?
Captain Segue.
Captain Segue reporting. You actually have an interesting opportunity that kind of spilled out through the ways of the internet and the means.
Yeah, for sure. It's we've been kind of mentioning it here and there in the past couple episodes as we've been doing the planning process, but out of the wake of your interaction with the ladies of the round table and the interview that you went in talking about En-ROADS, that sort of thing, I was able to connect with Holly Ann, and she is one of our regulars. Hi, Holly Ann. How you doing?
And, hi.
Conversation kind of led towards, hey, I've never played D&D. I would love to play this. And she's actually local to me. So I started, you know, proposing like different, you know, venues that we could try. I tried to see if maybe her husband wanted to join in, that sort of stuff. And the conversation drifted towards the potential of getting the ladies of the round table to play. And so that has actually come to fruition. The last couple months, or last month or so, we've been working on putting together a Halloween special. So I posted it in Facebook today as of the day of recording. It is going to be on Friday, October 28th. It's during their regular time slot at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And we will be doing Dungeons & Dragons, a Halloween special. So it's going to have some horrific themes to it, but it's not in the nature of being completely awful. But it might drift a little bit towards the R rating.
You know, people are so excited about this that they postpone other games just because of this.
What? No.
Yeah. Yeah, we got pushed back another week for our D&D game on Fantasy Grounds. Yeah, he did. He pushed it back.
I don't need to hear that. I don't need to hear that nonsense.
We're gonna keep you going, Jeff, because there have been several people who are part of Lort Nation on Twitter who are like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm actually gonna get to play D&D on the stream. It's gonna be amazing.
Oh, and some smart guy, M. Perna, decided to like raise it up saying, oh, you're gonna be so spoiled with Jeff Rome. I'm like, what are you doing?
I may have gushed. I may have been proud of my boy on Twitter.
low expectations.
I may have said Jeff Romo will ruin you for other GMs. I may have said that.
I'll do my best. But yeah, we're going to be launching into kind of a distant village setting. So it'll be a nice little creepy forest type setting.
Hey, don't give it away. Yeah. Don't give it away.
Oh, no, that's it. That's all I'm saying. But I one Save addition it. Thing I will say is that I am borrowing one of the ideas from Alyssa Kolb, who has been in our Victoriana campaign, was in my one shot for Dungeon World and D&D, and one of her creations is definitely going to make an appearance in this game. Sweet. I got pre-approval, all that stuff.
I do love the fact that we're going to continue to try and bring new people in all the time, but we're quickly developing a regular cast of characters for our YouTube games, because I'm piecing together Numenera. Like I said, those of you who might have seen on the Tavern and some other things, not only was I kicked out of the last podcast because of health reasons, all my projects got delayed because I am on a machine right now that is limping through life. I'm trying to get as much as I can out of this box before I have to get a new one. Despite some of our folks in the Tavern doing yeoman's work trying to walk me through fixing it, none of it worked. But I'm hoping that I can get that up and running soonish. Hopefully if I can keep coaxing more and more functionality out of this machine. But I've got some people coming in. We've got one guy who is... I've actually never actually talked with him other than through emails. He is part of our BGG guild. So we've got a guy who I barely know. I've got my buddy Dave, the guy who I went down to teach him D&D. He hasn't hard confirmed, but I basically sent him the PDF and said, dude, do you want in? He goes, yes, I do. I kind of want in, like, a lot. Those are the new people, but then there's some familiar faces. Romo is still involved, obviously, but who else? Alyssa Kolb and Brent Brown.
Wow, it's going to be a stacked party, that's for sure.
It's going to be a good group, provided all of them get there and we can work the schedule out and my tech out. It'll be a good group.
Well, I made the announcement today, right? So you guys saw it on Twitter, and I posted it in the Tavern and everything about the game with the Ladies of the Round Table. And I no sooner I posted that than I saw a separate post on Twitter in regards to a blog post from Wunder Geek. How's it spelled? WunderGeek. Mm-hmm. And she puts out a regular blog post. That's it's called go fix me a sandwich. I think or go make me a sandwich.
Go make me a sandwich.
Fantastic stuff about women in gaming and promoting the camaraderie that should be there and the equality that should be there. And right when I was kind of riding the crest of that high about posting about this game coming up and for Halloween and feeling like a 13-year-old boy playing my first ever D&D game ever and being so excited, I read this article from Wunder Geek and I started getting super angry. I actually feel like I'm getting angry all over again right now about how she's quitting her efforts of doing this blog post, of being as involved as she has been in promoting that equality in the gaming industry. And it's because of all of the, what's the parlance of the times, all the haters and the trolls and stuff that are out there, putting her down and, sending out names, hateful posts, that sort of thing, because they want to maintain the status quo. And it's been so angering to read that article. It's so heartfelt,
stuff like that just, it's under my skin. Well,
you got daughters.
I haven't read that. Yeah, I have a daughter.
Well,
I'll tell my son.
Sorry about that. You've got a daughter with friends that come over and play games, and their girls there.
Yeah, and it kills me because I'm trying to raise a young lady here that is very, very interested in nerd stuff. And we did it to ourselves. Yeah, we made it so appealing to them, they finally came over and they don't like sharing their toys. I mean, half our vacation last week was spent at the World of Harry Potter. That would be, back in the day, that would be something only nerds would do. And we just sat around, walking around using interactive wands to cast spells, and it was awesome. And my daughter loves this stuff, and she loves everything fantasy. She's like on her third time reading those books all the way through. And for a dude who probably sits in his mom's basement, for him to come up and just make comments about that, the girls shouldn't be doing things like that. You know, it just makes me mad.
Yeah.
Or that they're worthless.
The thing that is really, really just, it makes me frustrated and annoyed. It's the fact that so much of what, like, I after reading this, like, I'd never heard of this blog before, but I started seeing those texts. I saw it because Bill Cavalier, who, sorry guys, like, I have to say what his name is. You might know him as the Dungeon Bastard.
Yeah.
Bill Cavalier gets on there and he starts going off, multiple tweets, just, I can't believe we did this to somebody. I can't believe, like, this, you know, this community should be the most welcoming. You know, we've spent so long being isolated and hurt. Why would we ever turn that around and do that to somebody else? And I'm like, go on now. And so that sent me into looking at this blog and looking at the work that she's done. And this is work that needs to happen. And I've seen it. I'm actually not surprised at all that I saw a blog like this happen, because it's happened in video games for a long time now, because in video games, it's been more upfront, because tabletop games has the benefit of you being across the table from somebody. So it's hard to be that kind of an ignorant jerk when you're literally across the table from somebody.
What's the old term from the 80s or 90s, the telephone tough guy?
Yeah.
You know, you can do it across the interwebs and be a complete and total jerk relatively anonymously.
And so it's taken, you know, that is not even kind of to say that it doesn't happen in board gaming. I can list you a bunch of ladies who have gone through some awful, awful stuff just by being a woman who has an opinion about things on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important about blogs like this is that it's important that we get called on the crap that exists. And so much of it we've tried to write off as, this is just what games have always been. Yeah. You know, we always joke, and we've cited it on numerous occasions. I can't remember the name of the comedy group who did it, about the guys who are playing a role-playing game. And it's like, you know, where's the Mountain Dew, or where, you know, I attack the darkness and all that stuff. But there's this moment where the guy from the character that's in the other room in the kitchen looking for Doritos and Mountain Dew goes, are there any girls there? If there I want to do them. And I'm like, that so many people are looking at blogs like this that are saying, hey, by the way, you know, women should not be, like, if you look back in the history of D&D, female characters literally had stat caps that were lower than the male characters. Like, you physically were not able to play certain characters because of the stat caps.
Right.
Because the character is a woman. Like, anybody who's ever seen any kind of fantasy gaming art, this book art, that's character art.
I was about to go there too.
We all know about the way that women are portrayed in these games. Now, granted, thankfully, it's been on an upswing. Like, you actually have, like, practical armor for female warriors. And, you know, there's a lot of diversity and inclusion in the gaming books and the artwork that's used there.
Well, the thing that makes it so frustrating for me, though, when it comes to that stuff, is that I dare to say that it's not just about inclusion. I think it's also just saying, you don't have to be looked at that way.
Right.
You know, you can be included and that's fine, but it shouldn't be included with the caveat that you have to wear a chainmail bikini in order to fit into this game world.
Or you have to deal with us being just idiots.
Yes.
Because this is the game we've always played.
Exactly. Or the excuse, I think it was the Dungeon Bastard who said this, the lame excuse that, well, this person who talks and thinks this way, you know, he's a jerk, but at heart, he's really nice. It's like, no, what's coming out of his mouth is the overflow of his heart. And if that's what's coming out of your mouth, that's what you're thinking, and it's awful.
Yeah, nobody should have to endure that stuff. Like, I'm always about the fact that games should push boundaries.
Sure.
Games should make you feel you'll go right up to the edge of that uncomfortableness, and you should press into that uncomfortableness. Like, I do that with board games too. Like I mentioned it with like Freedom the Underground Railroad and The Grizzled, and This War of Mine, which one day I hope that I'll actually look at a copy of that game. Like, I do it with board games. I'll do it with role-playing games, man. Like, I play evil characters to see what that boundary feels like and what does it mean to live in that place. Like,
right.
I do that stuff because it's important to look into that uncomfortableness and see what's there to learn. Like, I think that if you're always in a rut, then that's not good either. But that is not an excuse to literally ruin someone's entire experience at the table because you want to be edgy.
Yeah.
Or you want to be that guy. I just listened to a podcast from the guys at Shut Up and Sit Down, and they were talking about the Conan board game. And Quinn's was like, I don't know how to deal with this because mechanically it's one of the best games I've played, like, ever. He's like, but it's Conan. And Conan was written in the 30s, and there is a ton of stuff that is really uncomfortable with racism and really uncomfortable in the depiction of women. He goes, a lot of the female minis in Conan are like topless and everything like that. And he goes, I would just feel weird playing that with my female friends.
Right. I want to introduce you to the game mechanics of a game that I think is probably the best designed game ever, but hope you don't mind the topless minis. Here we go.
Yeah. And so, it is that weird, awkward place. Like, yeah, that's what it's come from. That is the source material. But do we really, like, I'm all for embracing source material, but do we really need that? Because there's a whole group of people over here that won't want to play this because of that. And I think that anytime we are actively doing something that excludes people from the table, it might not be active exclusion. You might not be saying like this is the He-Man Woman Haters Club, you know, D&D game, but effectively when that's your go-to, that's what you're doing. You're basically saying we're going to make it so uncomfortable for you to be here that you know, we might as well be telling you don't come back. But I mean, you can't do that. It's not even kind of right. Just on a social contract kind of level, like on the way we work with each other, let alone with the ideas of faith and the idea of, you know, to bust out, you know, more technical terms than I'm usually used to doing in the podcast. Like these are people made in the image of God. You are staring at the Imago Dei and saying, by the way, it's all boob plate and, you know, reformed prostitutes for you. Exactly. We're going to be over here being heroes. You do your thing. I'm like, no.
And you actually had a good phrase there, social contract. There's going to be, how do I say this appropriately and make sure I'm not sounding like an idiot? There's going to be situations in a game where, you know, both as an agreement between male and female players, or whatever the diversity at the table is, that there's going to be a contract, an agreement that says, okay, we understand that this particular game set has this going on. We're okay to overlook that to get at the mechanics and enjoy a game that we love. However, there's also going to be, there needs to be that open social contract that says, hey, if I'm not okay with this, do you mind if we switch out the minis? Let's use some stuff from your new Guild Ball set and switch them out and play Conan. Or, you know, I don't really agree with this particular rule in this role-playing game. Let's switch it up.
We did that with Victoriana.
Yeah, for sure. That's actually a perfect example. We skirted around a lot of the social morass, and that was kind of the way I told the story, was to be able to avoid that kind of stuff. I put you guys into situations that didn't demand it, so that we didn't have to have that there.
But at the same point, you didn't completely wipe it off either.
No.
Like,
no.
Miranda and Dove, like, they were foreigners.
Right.
And we felt being foreigners.
Yeah.
Like, there were several people who looked down on us. Miranda, especially, as a woman who was a foreigner, got a lot of crap. But at the same point, we kind of said, okay, we're not going to take this to its logical conclusion where entire rooms of people aren't going to talk to her. Because that won't be fun for anybody.
Now, you have to have the option. Like, I'll put a couple of maids here and there. Or I'll have an alley that you guys can go and check out. And there's something spectacular here that you would have missed if you hadn't have been having to move out of the way of the higher uppity ups and that sort of thing. So I think the phrase social contract is perfect. Is that you come to an agreement as players, as adults, to decide what level of game you wish to have and what's comfortable and what's not comfortable. But you need to be willing to abide by that. You can't just say, this is the way I've played it. This is the plate mail that I always have seen. This is the way I've seen women depicted. This is the way I've seen men depicted. And I want it always to be this way. You can't, you can hold on to your guns, sure. But at the same time, it shouldn't be at the sacrifice of potentially having an epic game with somebody that might be uncomfortable with those said norms.
It's really important that you're understanding, and this is something that I think is especially lacking in everything that you see in the media at all right now, is just an absolute lack of empathy in anything.
Yep.
And that shows up huge here, because so much of the reason why this woman who is out there doing amazing things and pointing out the crap that needs to get fixed and celebrating the companies that are, like, she did a whole, like, I looked at some of the past stuff. She's been doing this for like 6 years. I looked at some of the past stuff and talking about things like, oh, look at what's happening now with the fifth edition rule book and some of the inclusive things that are happening here, and how the women are just as heroic as the male characters. And you've got people from, like, the human characters are broken down by each region and what they're like and everything like that. Like, she's celebrating the diversity stuff as well as pointing out the stuff that's been done wrong. Right. And I think that that's so important. And the idea that this is always the game that we've always played, this is my character, and, you know, I don't want you coming in here and saying that my character, you know, can't happen because I'm a jerk for one. Like, literally all it takes is a moment to say, oh my goodness, I don't want to actually hurt you. And whether it was my intention or not, I have.
Right.
That right there is such a huge piece that's missing in the way we interact with each other right now, is it doesn't matter if you meant it. It doesn't matter if the person is overreacting. That doesn't even matter. I don't think they are overreacting, but that's always the common argument. Why are you so sensitive?
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna cry a little bit? Oh.
Yeah, like that's always the go-to, like, whatever. Like, you're just being too sensitive. We're just being whatever. It doesn't matter your perception of their hurt. They're being hurt.
Right.
Like, deep down, hardcore hurt. And it doesn't matter what your intentions were. And I think that when it's something like this, one thing that Bill put out there, and it, like, I was gonna, I did kind of like mini tweet afterwards, but Bill did such a good job. Like, I won't link it because he uses the F bomb a little bit more frequently than I would care for.
Right.
But he put into words so clearly what it was about. And he goes, you know what's sad is that we chased her out. We chased her out. We didn't. And then, in the last hurrah kind of blog post she did, she goes, I always hear people like, we've lost somebody. And when she put that tweet out there, like, I feel like I'm, you know, it's always sad when you do stuff like this and you see people leaving like this, and you say that their voice has been lost, or they're lost the community. And then somebody else responded with a tweet that said, no one ever talks about the fact that we chased them out, and maybe we should reevaluate the way we do things because we've chased them out.
And he goes further to say that even if you aren't the jerk faces that have been saying the horrible things, even if you're the one who's not posting tweet after tweet after tweet of just horrific language and horrific put downs, the silence also speaks towards it. The silence also contributes towards somebody being chased out, somebody, a light like this being chased out of the hobby. I mean, this person was at one of the core drivers of how Gen Con changed when it came to women on panels. And we even talked about that a few episodes back, about some of the backlash from that. So it's gotta go to the heart. I mean, even if somebody is using that, like I said, that dumb excuse of, well, he says some things and he's kind of a jerk about it, but he's at his heart, he's a nice person, or she's a nice person, whatever, whoever is saying it. I don't believe it. I'm a firm believer that the things that come out of your face are an overflow of your heart. And if those are the kinds of things that you're saying, you know, brothers and sisters, you got a heart condition and you need to look at that real close.
Well, and it comes down to realizing, you know, that we're fallible.
Yeah.
And I know that seems very obvious, but in a lot of these discussions, everybody automatically goes to self-defense. Like, I have to prove to you that I'm not the one who does this. Mm. And we're so worried about putting out there and projecting, I'm not the one who does this, that we're negating the fact that it is happening and these people are feeling it and these people are dealing with it on the daily. But we're so like, it's, you know, you're overreacting. You've got no business saying that. You've got no reason. You're being oversensitive. We're literally destroying their personhood.
You know what's something that's very important about the faith that we profess is that whoever you are and whatever you do, you know, God looks at us as broken. And the second half of that, the other side of that coin, is that he doesn't care. He still loves us. He wants us to be who we are, obviously in his image, obviously going after the things that are of his heart. But he doesn't care how broken you are. You don't have to clean up. You don't have to make excuses. You don't have to do any of that nonsense to be in his flock. You just have to believe. And everything else kind of falls into place. And the idea that, like you said, people get defensive, right? You know, they immediately say, oh, well, I would never say something like that. How horrible. How terrible. The less you think about how perfect you are and realize that you are far less than perfect, that you are fallible, the less time you spend thinking about yourself and you think more on the things outside of you.
Listening is a much needed skill.
Amen.
And amen. As a people, not just as gamers, not just all of us right now, are suffering from a distinct lack of listening for the sake of listening. We've adopted a listening behavior of I'm listening so that I know how to respond. Yeah. And what that has become, it's not even listening for just to respond anymore. We've taken that to the next step and say, I'm listening so that I know how to destroy you.
Right. It used to be just listening for your turn to speak, right?
Right.
Now it's advanced.
Yeah. And instead, there's so many big ticket issues, which the podcast would be 2 hours if we sat down and talked about all of them. But there are so many of these that are floating around right now that are in that's so much limelight and so much attention. And there is no easy fix for them. There's a reason why they're as big and as prominent and as soul crushing at times as they are. It's because there's no easy fix. But an important first step is the idea that we walk in listening just for the sake of listening, to know what this person is dealing with and what this person has seen and felt. Because what often happens in whatever circumstance it is that they feel alone. They feel beat up, alone, and that everyone is out to get them. Because if from a certain lens, everyone is. And whether you want to admit that this is a part of our hobby, which it is, whether we want to admit it or not, there are people who suffer from this every day. This woman's been writing this blog for 6 years, and the blog post that she just put out basically said, I'm done. I feel like a failure. I feel like I've let down my family. I feel like I've let down my fans. I feel like I've let down every woman on the internet. Nobody should feel like they have to have that kind of weight, but I get it because she's just so flipping beat down by I don't know how many emails she gets every time she says, by the way this character looks in this game is sexist. No one should have to endure that. And I think, especially coming from where we're coming from, you know, proclaiming a faith in God, it's especially important that we get out there and be a voice of light and kindness in this space, because there are so few of them.
That's a draining topic.
It is. And it is. I know.
In a good way. I should say in a good way, because it's the awareness thing. That.
Yeah, no, I was super happy. Like I said, I put out like a mini Twitter rant. It was only a handful of tweets. And then to one of them, I said, you know, for what it's worth, I just want to be a guy who puts a little light in the internet. And I'm going to say I stand with Wonder Geek. And I was super happy that probably within a half hour of posting that, I got a little notification saying that she saw it and she liked the tweet. That literally just, I'm happy that somebody is doing that. And if you look on her wall right now and her blog comments, thankfully a lot of people are stepping up, and there are so many people, but I think it's important that more of these voices, you know, are heard supporting her, because, like I said, she's feeling beat up and knocked around a little bit, and you need to be able to pick that person up. But the other thing is that we need to be able to support voices that are saying this. Maybe we're not the voice that champions that. Maybe it's something that we bring up now and then. Maybe it's something that, you know, you just having conversation, you don't take it to the internet. But one thing that has to happen, regardless of what place you find yourself in this discussion, one thing that has to happen is that we need to be supporting the people who do this, because burnout can be a very real thing. And if the only voices they're hearing in response, if the only reaction they get is you're stupid, you're wrong, and here's a litany of words that I even refuse to use. I keep it clean for the podcast because I know we've got people from all ages and all different. I don't curse like a sailor, but I do have a very refined use of strong language when it's applicable. But there are words that get said to these people that I even just outright refuse to say.
Oh yeah.
And they see it nonstop every day.
I can't even imagine it.
And so it's important that the folks who are out there, who are asking the questions, who are out there and pointing out the things that need to change and the things that need to be fixed, we need to be supporting them, because somebody needs to. Because they are doing amazing work, and they are literally stepping into the line of fire. It might be verbal fire, but it's still freaking fire. And they're the ones who are making the change for people who can't say anything. And so we need to be the people who are behind them and supporting them, and make sure that they know that there are more voices than the ones that are shouting them down.
It's a good signal for all of us.
All right. So I think we need to stop. I could go on for days about this and about other issues, and
for sure.
We have other podcasts.
There'll be an episode 139. We could always just make it a part two.
Yeah, I these things get me so, like, it takes a lot to burn my fuse, and stuff like this where we're making it difficult just to be a person talking about this stuff, where it literally like snips the fuse down to the wire, and it bugs me. But I think that we can call it here. I will, you know, just say that one thing that's happening in the very near future that I hope y'all will get behind is Extra Life. Well, I got two things that'll be an upswing to kind of get the rage out and get the frustration out. Two things that are really cool. One is Extra Life. It is happening roughly 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks when this episode goes live, that we'll be doing Extra Life on November 5th. If you want to play, you can join our team. I'll have the Extra Life team page linked on when I post this. I will say that we were so close last year to reaching our fundraising goal. We set the goal at $2,000 and we were literally $60 short. I know we can hit it. I know we can. There's part of me that always gets nervous as we're this far out. I know that most of the donations happen the week of the event, but there's always part of me that gets nervous, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe we haven't raised this much money yet. But if you want to join the team and raise money for, you know, whatever team you want, we're the bulk of the team is playing for Children's Specialized Hospital, but you can be on the team and personally it'll go to whatever hospital you want. So if you want to get up there and raise money to help kids, I don't care if you're here for our local event. I don't care if you're streaming video games. I don't care if you're playing a solo game of Onirum for 24 hours. If you're raising money for these kids, you can be part of the Inroads Regulars team. Just go to the team page and set it up. If you can't be part of the event, if you can't be part of the team, I would love it if you would just take a minute, because that's what it takes, is just a minute to go to our team page, pick any one of our teammates. I will say that if you want to donate to mine, my goal is $500 this year and I've raised 15 so far. So if you want to go stop at my page and donate, I will be very thankful, because I after doing this for, this is our fourth year doing it. I really always want to do right by the kids at Children's Specialized, especially because I know somebody on staff at Children's Specialized. So like, I've heard about these kids. I know these kids' stories and I really want to do right by them. So if you want to stop by my page, I will gladly receive any donations for those kids. But yeah, so that's coming up November 5th and I would love it if you would support the team or be part of it. Another thing, which is significantly shorter than any of that, is that I want to thank the man, the myth, the encyclopedic legend that is TR Knight, because TR gave me a present. TR randomly messaged me. He's like, hey, what's your mailing address? And I basically told him just to use the Inroads P.O. box. And he was real coy about it. He's like, I'm going to send you something. And, I can't talk about it, but TR is kind of the reason why something cool is going to happen later on this year. So I'm like, is it related to that? He goes, no, but you're going to like it. And he just left it at that. So I'm literally like a kid at Christmas, like looking at the P.O. box every day. Like, oh my goodness, is it here yet? Oh my goodness, is it here yet? And, I eventually got it, and it is a copy of Dragon and Flaggin, which I have often declared as the Inroads Ministries mascot game, because it is a fantasy bar brawl. And I haven't gotten it to table yet. I'm hoping this weekend. I have a personal game day and a ministry game day this weekend. So I'm hoping that I can get it to table at some point. But it's so good. The 3D bits are amazing. The game looks really fun as you're throwing mugs and furniture and tipping tables and doing all this crazy stuff. And the one thing that I loved that I didn't know about until I opened the box is that they basically said, oh, well, some people have a thing against alcohol, so maybe we should have something that isn't the Dragon Flagon. And the alternate option is that you can be fighting over a plate of cookies. I absolutely love it. And then there's an alternate set of rules, and it says you can play with the Dragon Flagon and the cookies. I'm like, why would I not do that?
Of course.
So, this game looks fantastic. I cannot wait. I'm hoping that next episode I'll be able to tell you guys how glorious it is. I'm hoping that I can get like a game of like 10 people playing this, because from everything that I've seen in reviews, they're like, yeah, it's entertaining with a small amount of people. But if you can get like 10 people playing this game, it becomes chaos. Beautiful, beautiful chaos. So thank you, TR, for sending that my way. I desperately look forward to playing that game.
Well, how about you, Daniel?
Well, if anybody wants to get in contact with me, they can just find me on the Facebooks, Daniel Fisher. I'm the guy with the gun. But this weekend as well, I'm hosting a En-ROADS game day at our church, and I'm super excited about it. And maybe one day might let me borrow Dragon and Flagon, because I don't know if I'll buy it anytime soon.
You're going to do awesome. I just know it.
Oh, yeah. I'm super nervous, but we'll see.
You'll be fine. Well, for me, you can definitely find me on the tavern for sure. I will be there. I've been a little bit quiet lately, but I already mentioned why. I've been in prep with the ladies of the round table for our Halloween special on October 28th. So for all you folks that are fans of Twitch, you can head on over to twitch.tv/ladies of the round table. And that will be on, what is it, Friday, October 28th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, Lord Nation.
So definitely looking forward to that. Other than that, find me on the tavern, and you can always hit me up on Twitter at GSPKHEEGAN, GSP Keegan, and I will certainly get back to you.
All right, Jeff, why don't you send us out here?
Well, after this conversation, the fun and the seriousness and all of the ups and downs, it's always comforting to know that God is the game master. And no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.